As far as avoiding cancer, it's a big question, isn't it? And I would start small and I would focus on two things. And you're probably going to be surprised that neither of these are food, but kind of dovetailing on Dr. Josh Axe, who said mindset is more important than diet. How is that possible that the thoughts that I think, the gratitude I feel, or the anger or the unforgiveness that I feel is going to impact my body more than food? Seriously. Wow.
Welcome to Functional Moms Podcast, lifestyle medicine for women over 40. Let's age on our own terms. This episode is for anyone looking to reduce their risk of cancer. It is also for people who are currently battling cancer. Prepare to be inspired.
Our guest today is Deborah Herlax-Enos, a certified nutritionist, nationally known healthy living expert, and recent breast cancer thriver. She is also a host of the popular podcast, Why Did I Get Cancer?
Deborah was living her best life and was the on-air healthy living expert at Q13 Fox News in Seattle. She traveled nationwide as a professional wellness speaker. She is a nutritionist who ran half marathons, did hot yoga, ate mainly organic, and was an early adapter of not wearing deodorants with aluminum. So naturally, Deborah was shocked to be diagnosed with breast cancer on September 1st, 2020.
Deborah, first of all, thank you so much for coming on the show today. We would love to hear your story, especially how you handled getting diagnosed with cancer after living such a healthy lifestyle.
Well, thanks for having me on the show. And I got to tell you, I was ticked as heck that I got cancer. I was the person who was ordering the organic chicken salad, you know, dressing on the side, running half marathons, not wearing deodorant, being really stinky around my friends and family, because I knew, like, I mean, I'm a holistic nutritionist. So I've been in this field for 30 plus years. And I've been to the classes, I've done the research, you know, get my continuing education credits. I knew that I was making all the right decisions. So when I got called back for a wonky mammogram, I just thought, you know, I've got dense breast tissue. And that has brought me back many times. Some women with dense breast tissue, it's just like we're used to getting the call back. And then when the doctor called and said, you know, I'm so sorry to tell you, you have breast cancer. And I said, you know, I actually don't. And I just left the phone on the counter. My husband picked it up and I just went for a walk. I was mad as all get out because I don't know how this could have possibly happened to me, all the things that I had done to protect myself.
Yeah. I mean, I would feel the same way. Like, and I understand the dense breast thing because I have that and I've been called back many times too. And I try to always be calm about it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I guess it's always in the back of your mind. Something could be going on.
Right. Yeah. We're used to the callback, right? And so my first thought was, of course, it goes to, am I going to need chemo? Am I going to lose my hair? Am I doing radiation? Like, and then I texted a girlfriend. I had like three or four girlfriends who were kind of just tracking with me as far as me going back and getting the test. And I just texted her. I just said one word, cancer. And so she told the two other friends who were tracking with me, and they showed up at my house like 5 hours later with a bottle of really good Chardonnay and pink bracelets. And they said, we're not going to take these off until you're cancer free, which was an amazing level of support because I had no idea how to navigate cancer. I have almost zero family history. And I'm also super grateful and blessed. I literally have never walked through cancer with anybody in my life. I just didn't know anybody who had it. And one of the girlfriends, her name's Kathy, had recently had breast cancer and had finished her battle. And she, I remember her, you know, holding up a glass of Chardonnay and saying, okay, your life is about to change. Oh my gosh, I don't want my life to change. I love my life. I'm keeping my life. And I just started sobbing. And that was a pretty dark
How long
day.
Ago was that?
Yeah. September of 2020. And then I had actually ended up having four surgeries. They couldn't get it out. It was kind of sprinkled throughout my breast. And so I had two lumpectomies, a mastectomy, and a reconstruction.
Wow. I got to say, I was listening to an episode episode that you had with on your podcast. You had a guest, Josh Axe. Yeah, Dr. Axe.
That's Dr. Axe. Yeah.
And, you know, I hear you speaking about these women that would come out. And I know that you're a woman of faith and of great faith. And you had said in when you were sharing with Dr. Axe how you were mad at God for 3 days because you said, I did all the things. I volunteer. You called your friend, who she's one of your prayer warriors, right? One of your girlfriends. And you were like, what is it? I did all the things. I am a great woman of faith. Like, how could this happen? And she said, it sounds like you have a transactional relationship with God. And this is the part that for me, I got to tell you, Deborah, like this, I have no, you know, we're all.
You're making me cry.
This part, when you said this in this podcast, when she said that to you and you were like, oh yeah. And then your thoughts changed from, if I do good, everything is going to be good. He is going to bless me. And you changed that perspective to, yes, he is going to bless me, but he is going to bless me in his way. And I tell you, thank you for sharing that, because I want to tell my kids that, because that perspective, that's why you have an amazing podcast now.
Thank you. It was shocking to hear my friend Deanne say that to me. Mm-hmm. And I was mad at her too. Because I thought, you know, I grew up in the 70s and 80s where women were good girls. And if you're a good girl, you get rewarded. Like, that's just the way it works. So I transferred that being a good girl to my relationship with God. So if I'm good, you're going to reward me with good things. But they were my ideas of good things, not his ideas of good things. That has been a massive shift in my life, in my career, and probably best of all, my relationships, including my relationship with him.
Yeah. I do think a lot in terms of, is this happening to me or is this happening for me? You know, how I think of it is like the experience that I'm going to have. And I think that, you know, in that deep place, I just from the talk that you that I gathered from what you when you were talking to Josh is like you decided at a certain point that this was going to serve other people.
Yes. And yeah, I'm a teacher, you know, and a good day for me is going to bed and thinking, wow, you know, like I was able to give somebody some coaching today about, you know, how to lower their cholesterol or whatever it is. Or, you know, one of our kids, like I was talking to our youngest daughter, Cece, yesterday about grounding and about how important it is to walk around on grass for at least 5 minutes a day. It helps to thin your blood, which is a good thing. So, you know, like that just made me so happy we all want to give wisdom, right?
Absolutely.
And so, yes, hearing her advice was really hard, but it has completely changed my relationship with God. And I think one of the things that I love the most is how it's changed my relationship that I have toward me and toward others. And so I don't put people in a box anymore. I don't put myself in a box because I think that is kind of transactional. Like, okay, you behave this way or you vote this way. So I'm going to put you over here in this box and da da. You know, life is complicated and complex. It's good. And so I'm just a big believer in letting people be who they are and just figuring it out as you go along.
Wow. I was curious, how did you decide even what treatment route to go? Because as someone that came from the natural health space and, you know, doing all these preventative things, like, was that difficult for you?
Yeah. I say I have regrets. I'm not a person that likes to live with regrets. So I need to kind of think about what that languaging is looking like. But I do feel like I was overtreated. And I didn't know then what I know now because of my podcast. And so that's one of the reasons why I love my podcast so much is I feel like it's the podcast I wish I would have heard when I was going through it. And what I would have done, and I'm talking about me, I'm not disseminating medical advice because as my oncologist would say, every person's cancer journey is different. But for my journey, I wish I would have pumped the brakes a little bit, gotten some additional opinions, and just slowed down a bit. But it was COVID. I just wanted out of my body. And I thought there was only one way to do that, which was surgery. And now that I've been interviewing experts, you know, I think there are some natural things that we could probably be doing that can help boost our immune system and support our bodies so that maybe we don't have cells that go rogue in the first place. But, you know, there's been, you know, some interesting people like Chris Beat Cancer. He's been a guest on my podcast. And Dr. Lee Erin Keneally, author of The Cancer Revolution, I think is her book. And there's so many new modalities out there that I would have liked to have given some of them a chance.
Well, thank goodness you've created this podcast and this platform for others that are, they're on the journey and that, you know, hopefully don't want to be in that place, but now they have this resource and that you wish you had, which is amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's been fun. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think also like that cancer is something that you're constantly hearing about. And what I also notice is just like in my area alone, like there's so many new urgent cares that are popping up, new medical. Every time I see there's the new medical building that's being built, I'm like, wow, I feel like this neighborhood is expecting a lot of more sick people. Like what is going on? Right.
Yeah, that's really interesting perspective. Yeah. What do they know that we don't know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Do we want to know?
Right. And so I think about that I think like cancer is like the biggest, scariest thing. Like I think when you talk to most people, that's the one main thing that they're afraid of is cancer.
I agree with you. Yeah. And cancer rates these days, especially for young people, I mean, it's just shocking. Yeah. Right. And it's a little terrifying, but knowledge is power. So what's going on with our young people?
Right. What do you think is going on?
Well, after having multiple conversations with, you know, people who are so much smarter than I am, I think there's a lot of things. I think, you know, we really rely and are addicted to processed foods. We are addicted to our phones and other types of screens. So we're really sedentary, which is not good. I feel like we've lost our communities during COVID. And so we've got a lot of people out there who are really lonely. And I had an amazing podcast with the creator of the Radical Remission Project, Dr. Kelly A. Turner. And she's talking about laughter. And you know what? I don't laugh usually when I'm alone. I laugh in the presence of other people. And she talked about this amazing study. And they had breast cancer cells in a petri dish. Then they dropped in oxytocin. Oxytocin is created when, you know, we're laughing or we're in community or, you know, we're having an intimate experience.
Yep.
I'm trying to keep it clean, ladies. And they dropped oxytocin into this petri dish and the breast cancer cells died.
Amazing.
Amazing information. So, you know, I guess you'd have to ask yourself the question, you know, how much am I laughing every day? And if I laugh more in the presence of friends or going to a movie, if I'm by myself, like what can you do to laugh more each day? And, you know, I think that these are all factors. Also, let's consider the EMF, you know, issue. In one of my conversations on my podcast with a cancer and oncology expert, she was saying, you know, in the fine print, when you buy a cell phone, it says, don't let this touch your body.
Does it really? Because I didn't realize that.
It does.
Wow.
It does. So when you see people with their phones and they stick them in their bra or they stick them in their back pocket, she was saying that in the research she's read with the increase in rectal colon cancer, there is an EMF link, people putting their cell phones in their back pockets.
Yeah. So, I mean, so there are so many things, right?
So there's so many things.
How do we, I guess, manage it without stressing ourselves out too much about all the things too?
Well, and it's a great question because if we give out too much information, I think you can get really paralyzed with like, where do I start? Well, screw it. There's too much. So I'm just not going to start anywhere. So I think where I would start would be sleep.
Okay.
And protecting your sleep, that's when your body clears out the junk. You know, it clears out the amyloid plaque in your brain. It, you know, you reset, you know, muscle and nerve cells, and your body is really focused on, again, just like cleaning and clearing things out. So how do you get 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night? Well, you start with maybe getting a Wi-Fi router kill switch. So you kill the Wi-Fi to your bedroom. And when you hear the C word, going at night in your sleep area, what happens is you don't make as much melatonin. When your body's not naturally making enough melatonin, you don't sleep as well. And there's also been some really great, well-researched studies with shift workers, women, and breast cancer. And because, again, they're off on their cycle as far as they're working when it's dark and sleeping when it's light, there is a higher uptick in breast cancer for women in those populations. So, you know, what can we do to protect our sleep? Don't don't have your cell phone charging in your bedroom. Get a regular clock, you know, instead of using your cell phone. When I travel, and I travel a fair amount, I take towels out of the bathroom. I always get extra towels when I check in, and I cover, you know, the clock radio and the this and the that. And I really make sure I cover. I wear a sleep mask at night to really darken things. And so I'm a very light sensitive person. And so I live in Seattle, Washington. Right now, my husband's mowing the lawn at 10 o'clock at night because it's still light out. And so that is hard because, you know, the light starts hitting us again at 4:30 in the morning. So we're a lot like Alaska in the summer. And so it's, you know, you got to figure out how to manage your light at night. And that means screens and, of course, outdoor light. So that's where I'd start.
It's true. Yeah. There are so many things that are impacting our sleep that we didn't have years ago that we just didn't think about. So often I'll see my kids, like they'll have their phones next to their nightstand. I'm like, no, don't have that by your head all night. So these are good tips to keep in mind.
I think one of the things that is very hard in terms of protecting your sleep is, you know, the stories that you have roaming around in your head that can keep you from sleeping. I think that, you know, like I can do all those things, but I'm just like, my chatterbox is like off on a rant. And I know I have a history of anxiety and ADHD, I have a lot of energy, like whatever you wanted to label me. But I think that's been the hardest part. You know, I think of like, you know, you hear so many people like taking like things to help them sleep, you know, like drugs to help them sleep. That's a huge thing. And so I think that like, if I don't know, I've never had cancer, but you probably have so many stories, like forecasts that you're going through that you have to, you know, you think about your family, like you just have all these stories that you have to put a screeching halt to. And I think it was also in that interview that you did with Dr. Axe when you said that you started saying like, I'm going to sleep. I sleep well. And it was like just that. I think it's like the neuroplasticity, right? Like,
right. And it works. I'm telling you, I was a Ritalin kid. I have the tape going in my head all the time, CD, whatever. And I getting a handle on my brain at night has proven to be challenging. So there's two things that I do now, actually three things. One, I quit drinking water about 3 hours before bed because, you know, I'm at that age. I don't want to get up in the middle of the night to have to go to the bathroom. So that has been a real helpful game changer for me. So I'll just take sips. Like, you know, I'm not drinking, you know, I'm holding up a glass of water. I'm not drinking a whole glass of water an hour before bed. And then secondly, there's two techniques that I have just kind of created that have worked for me. One is I prophesy over myself and I'll get into bed and I'll just say, oh, you're so tired. You're already asleep. You're a great sleeper. You are, you know, crushing the sleep game. So I'll just kind of do that. And if that doesn't work, I actually start to rehearse all of the miracles in my life. And so I'll go back to, and it could be just something little like, oh my gosh, I was going to this concert and I got a parking spot right in front, like, you know, just little things like that. But I've had some other health things where I'm just like, wow, God, you really saw me through. And I remember being in that waiting room and I was waiting for the results of my latest scan and you were there for me. And I just start rehearsing miracles. And I'm telling you, I am out in 5 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah. And it totally, I feel like it just changes my cells from being one of like rehearsing the day and kind of like, oh man, I didn't do that. And I didn't get that email out. And you know, maybe I could have been a little nicer on this phone call, to it just like shifts my me at a cellular level to one of just great gratitude and appreciating the miracles around me. Like I might even get a bit, just think about all the bald eagles that I saw today. I mean like that. And it soothes me. So I've learned to kind of soothe myself at night versus get myself agitated.
Right. Like giving yourself a bedtime story.
I love that. Yeah. It's so true.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I'm going to start using that. Thanks. That's good.
And so then that compounded with all the other things you're saying, like make sure your room is dark and, you know, like those things really help.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, getting new blinds are expensive, but a sleep mask is $20. So
yeah, that works.
If I'm traveling and I forgot my sleep mask, I will literally just take a washcloth from the bathroom and put it over my eyes. It works. So these don't have to be expensive fixes. I want to be really aware of that. And I don't want people to say, well, yeah, that works for you because, you know, know, you have X amount in the bank. That's not where I want to come from with this. What I want to say is, let's start with the basics. And the basics might be sleeping better, sleeping more, staying off screens at least an hour before bed, because that does impact your melatonin production. But also, can you move more each day? You know, we do have a sedentary lifestyle. So can you put an alert on your phone and every hour you get up and, you know, maybe you're doing some yoga stretches or you're walking around your apartment or if you have a yard, walking around your yard.
I know. I've been working on that, just trying to get outside more. I've noticed so much of the year I'll spend too much time inside, and I know I feel better. I feel calmer. My anxiety decreases. Like, it's something about being in nature is so powerful.
Yes. I couldn't agree more. And I just had an interesting conversation with a guest a couple of weeks ago. And I said, I was just in Chicago. Our oldest daughter, Jordan, just graduated from University of Chicago. And we were at our hotel. We were on the 29th floor. And this expert was all about grounding. And I said, I felt just like wacky for 5 nights. Like, I just didn't feel like myself. And he's like, well, here's why. You know, did you walk in any grass? I'm like, nope, didn't. My foot didn't touch grass or dirt for 5 days. And he was talking about the power of, again, being in nature. You don't have to go for a run. You could just find a park, walk around a couple of trees,
absolutely.
And you can feel better.
But, and you don't need a ton of time either. It could be short. That's the other thing I would get hung up on. I'd think, oh, I don't have enough time to do that, you know?
Right. Well, the other thing is, you know, that comes to mind is like walking on this grass, you know, is the concern is being sprayed with Roundup or like that. Like, so it's it like to, you know, is how do I decide? Like, am I going to walk on that grass?
I know. Isn't that just so silly that we have to consider that? Is there going to be glyphosate, which is the active ingredient in Roundup? Is there going to be glyphosate all over that grass? And like, how do I weigh the benefits? So that's a great question. I don't know the answer to it other than, you know, they usually don't spray dirt. And so, you know what? Yeah. So they usually spray dirt. They'll spray grass and rocks. Like, I mean, what I'm from the experts, you can be grounding, like standing on, you know, some rocks, like, you know, like decorative rocks that are in a landscape. And those probably are also not sprayed. And again, crazy that we have to have this conversation, but you brought up a really good point. Like, there are things in our environment that are not doing us any favors.
Like, I live close to the beach and sometimes I'll just walk like right on the shore, like with the waters, like I'll just go for a walk and I just literally connect with the ocean, connect with the sand, just, and then I look at where I'm at, but I'm just not looking right in front. I'm looking at everything, like just being a part of this world, like just being a part of like the environment and just connecting with it. And I tell you, it's like a vacation. It's like so rejuvenating.
It really is.
And it's like such a vacation. What are your thoughts about, do you think that eating organic matters for preventing cancer?
I do. I think it matters much more than we have been notified that it matters. So yes, I think it's really important. We spray our products, our produce, so much in this country. And it's usually sprayed again as a drying agent, glyphosate, right before it's harvested. So, you know, there it might be, you know, sprayed throughout the growing process, but then it's heavily sprayed right at the end. And that doesn't come off. So, it, you know, it goes into your food. You can't wash it off. You can, you know, there's probably experts on Instagram who are going to say, yeah, if you use this and this, it's going to, you know, it's, but if it grows with it, it's growing into it. So yeah, it's, the food is really challenging. So yes, I believe in organic, but I also am very sensitive to how much it costs to eat organic food. Prices are up on everything. So here's where, how I make my food dollar really go as far as it possibly can is I go to farmers markets and I just Google farmers market near me. And I actually even do this when I'm traveling and I'll go grab apples. So, you know, whatever it is, I will make sure I get fresh produce. If it's not organic, I do scrub it pretty good when I get it home. I've just got a, you know, scrub brush. I might use vinegar. I might use baking soda to try to get off as much as I possibly can. But for the most part, I'm buying our food at farmers markets. And then I also have a garden. And your listeners might say, yeah, but I have a brown thumb. You know what? I hear you. I grew up on a farm, so I do not have a brown thumb. But you could get basil from Trader Joe's and put it on your kitchen counter and have fresh basil. muscle. Like, start small. There's nothing wrong with small beginnings. And then from the Trader Joe's basil, you get a nice pot at, you know, at the garden center, and you start to grow some lettuce and more herbs. Herbs are nutritional powerhouses. I wish people understood more of the power of herbs. And just adding like a snip here and a snip there can really, you know, give a huge nutrient boost to whatever you're eating.
I love that. You're inspiring me, because I would consider myself to have a brown thumb. The pots is such a doable way. And so, yeah.
It's such a doable way. Yeah. And then you can move them around. Like if the sun, you know, like as the summer goes on, if it's not long sunny over there anymore, you keep moving them so you can have a harvest, you know, through end of October, where, depending on where you live.
So we also wanted to know, what are your thoughts on sugar consumption and cancer? So we've heard some people say there's a link. I've actually, you know, talked to people that are like oncology nurses, and they're like, oh, the snacks we have for the patients are Oreos and Lorna Dunes. Like, and so in conventional, it doesn't seem to be a thing. They're like, no, it doesn't matter what you eat. But so we're just curious on what your thoughts are and what you've learned.
Yeah. So there are some major changes I've made to my diet post-cancer. First of all, I would say, you know, I maybe didn't drink a lot of alcohol, but I know that there is a pretty big uptick in cancer, breast cancer recurrence, or breast cancer in general, with every drink that you have. I don't remember the, you know, actual statistics right now, but I can get them for you. And that was enough for me to think, like, you know, we've all been there, you know, we have homes, we've got kids, we work. I'd come home from work and I would just say, I need a drink, you know, and I'd have a beer, I'd have a glass of Chardonnay. And, you know, I don't do that very often anymore. So maybe my 5 days a week of a glass of wine has gone down to one every 10 days. Right. To me, it was a risk wasn't willing to take anymore. And so now I do different things. So I have, you know, beautiful glassware, and now I find a nice fizzy drink, you know, with a Perrier and maybe a little, you know, pour over of cramp, whatever it is. So I still celebrate the end of the day, but I'm just not consuming as much alcohol, which of course is also a sugar, which is going to drive inflammation. I don't think you're ever going to get a straight answer on sugar and cancer. So what I will say is, in my experience, I feel better cutting back dramatically on sugar. I don't ever want to have cancer again. And does it mean I never have sugar? Absolutely not. I still have sugar every day, but I'm no longer having copious amounts 3 or 4 times a day and only thinking of myself as what size jean I'm in, you know, or what I weigh on the scale. So to me, the sugar has absolutely nothing to do with my weight and everything to do with driving inflammation. I'm still recovering. It's been 3 years since my last surgery, almost 3 years, and I'm still tired. I mean, my body went through a lot, and the more inflammation I have in my body, at least in my experience, I don't sleep. I'll have hot flashes. I'll be sweating. I'm uncomfortable. And I just feel better when I'm cutting back on sugar and alcohol.
So you notice a correlation even with your hot flashes and things like that with those things?
Oh, goodness gracious. Yeah, because I was on hormones, because I'm 59 now. And so I was experiencing dry eyes, where I was on all kinds of drops and ointments and you name it. And that can also be a symptom of menopause or, you know, perimenopause. So my doctor had me on hormone therapy. And I remember her saying one time, oh, the day you have to come off of this, I just don't know what's going to happen to your eyes. So I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to keep going as long as I can. Then I get diagnosed with breast cancer, and I basically was immediate, like that day I went into menopause because I no longer had the hormones, and I didn't sleep for 3 years. I didn't sleep for longer than 2 hours at a time because of hot flashes. Now that's a menopause thing, but it's also my poor little body had 4 surgeries in 5 months, and it was just a lot. So I think between the two, I just didn't sleep for longer than probably an hour and a half, 2 hours for 3 years. And if I had a glass of wine to try to help manage myself or manage my stress, I didn't sleep at all.
Yeah. A lot of people do talk about that. Definitely impacts your sleep very badly. Yeah. Okay. And then, so we also wanted to ask you, what role do you think stress plays in cancer? Like, we kind of touched a little bit upon it, but is it a big player here?
Yeah. I think it's, you know, I'm going to say it's probably in the top two. Yeah. I think stress, we have a stress epidemic in our world, in our country, in our homes. And I've interviewed enough experts now to realize we can't take life as seriously as we're taking it, where we get so ramped up about somebody cutting you off in traffic or the barista putting foam on your cappuccino when you ask for no foam. Like, we have to calm the heck down. And I think we're all just again, the way the world is, we're watching too much news. And I used to be on the news. Like, I can tell you, we're watching too much news. We're reading too much news. We're headline educated. That level of stress has to go somewhere. And I don't know where it's going to go. Different experts will tell you different things. But for me, when I got really ramped up, I didn't sleep. That's a sign to my body, for my immune system, to say, if you're not sleeping, we're not working. So if your immune system is not fully functioning and you're resting and you're hydrated and you're eating good food and you're laughing, you're hugging people that you love, like, your body's not going to be fully engaged in doing what God made it to do.
Yeah. I mean, that's so true. So many of us are trapped in that sympathetic state. And like, it's like, we can't switch back. It's really difficult. And we've had people even, we did an episode with a breathwork coach, and we had a lot of people comments on how they realized, like, oh my gosh, I don't think I'm ever in the parasympathetic state, which is very upsetting. What are actually some things that we could do to try to get into that state? Like, what are things that work for you?
Yeah, there's a few things. And I love breathwork. Mm-hmm. I suck at it. I'm just going to say that. With all sincerity, is that I forget about it. And I'm not a good traditional meditator. I keep putting it on my list and I keep bypassing it. So what I do is I put my hand on my stomach and I take a lot of deep breaths. I make my exhale longer than my inhale, which helps to calm down my nervous system. I do a lot of what I call a walking meditation or a prayer walk, where I'll just take a 10-minute mental health break. I leave my phone at home. Nobody's going to need me for 10 minutes like that. That is a little bit too much ego if I think the world can't, you know, work without me for 10 minutes. Leave my phone at home. And I just put my hand on my stomach as I'm walking, make sure I'm breathing deeply in and out. I'm not taking chest breaths because we don't have a lot of lung tissue up in the chest area. And then I try to reconnect with my body. So I might just do a little bit of stretching. I keep a dish towel next to my computer monitor and I'll just, you know, kind of stretch back a little bit. I'll do some lymphatic things. I have an issue with lymph flow because I had a lymph node removed. And so I'll just maybe do some lymphatic massage, which you can find on YouTube, or I'll even just lay down. I've read enough about this and talked to enough experts that just laying down for like 5 minutes can reset your nervous system. I also love legs up the wall, which is exactly legs up the wall.
Yeah.
It's a yoga. I just did this yesterday in a yoga class. Put my hand on my stomach, legs up the wall, and just chilled out and thought about the three things I was grateful for. Completely reset my nervous system.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love how you said, I don't meditate in the traditional sense, because I love that you're saying that and you're showing all these other examples, because I think that a lot of people are like, oh, I suck at meditating. I can't meditate, because they're thinking that they have to, you know, sit on a mat with their legs crossed and be like, and it doesn't have to. I mean, you could do that if that works. That's cool. But meditating could also be going for a run, and just like, I go out for a walk with my dog for 30 minutes and we walk and I just look at the trees and I just really look at it. Sometimes I even stop at a tree and just think like, wow, you're so beautiful. Like, look at this tree, right? Like, just connecting. That's meditation. That's, you know, sometimes I have a lot of clients and I'm running, I'm in my car going from this appointment to that appointment. And if there's a break, I'll pull up in a center or somewhere where there's a tree. I'll park right in front of the tree. And then I just recline. I have a little, right, like the thing that you use in the airport, the little pillow thing. And I just recline my chair and I just sit there and I'll just take a nap. I'll just like a 5 minute nap, 10 minute.
Oh my gosh. I love that idea.
Yeah. I just pull over wherever I'm at, whatever neighborhood I'm at in between appointments. And I just talk about resetting. Like, it just like, boom, you know, I have long, long days and I get that I have a lot of moving parts. And, you know, we were just at the conference in Las Vegas for the international.
Oh, for the functional medicine. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's a woman, Dr. Neff, who talked about self-compassion. And I just think that all these things that we're talking about right now, all the things that you're talking about, it's just self-compassion, having self-respect, respecting our own being and managing that being and supporting our being, right? In the passage of where we are, period.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I love that. Yeah. Self-compassion.
Absolutely.
It's a gift. It's true.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So let me see. Being mindful of our time today.
I love that. Way to throw that in.
So, Deborah, you're cute. What are two simple things that a person can do today to reduce the risk of developing cancer? Or maybe also, if we can just add an additional, maybe also two simple things that a person undergoing cancer treatment may consider, like, two simple, like, little things that you can share for somebody that, you know, was like, okay, I'm trying not to get cancer, and or someone that may have been in your situation that will help ease their journey.
Well, I would say if you're in the journey, accept help. I've never been the person who was really good at saying, hey, could you help me get my luggage in the overhead bin? Could you help me? Whatever. And I had to get good at saying yes to help, or even saying to people, it was hard for my husband because he's army guy. Like, he's a military, he needed a mission. And I didn't have a mission. We were just trying to figure out like the path. And I would have to say to him every day, here's what I need from you today. Can you make dinner? Can you get me flowers, whatever it was. Can you drive me to the hospital? And I think just being really clear with people is in itself a gift. And I was blessed to be surrounded by people who did send me flowers and dropped off meals to my house. And I had such a prayer. I had prayer warriors. Wow. Our pastors came over from church every time I had a surgery and anointed me with oil and prayed over me. So my heart goes out to people who don't have that community. So if you don't have that community, there are some resources where people can like coach you and mentor you and be there for you, maybe even virtually, but that, and ask for help. So I would say that would probably be my biggest thing. If you're going through it, is it's okay to be vulnerable. People, it's a gift that they get to help you. And that took me a while to get that around in my head. As far as avoiding cancer, it's a big question, isn't it? And I would start small, and I would focus on two things. And you're probably going to be surprised that neither of these are food, but kind of dovetailing on Dr. Josh Axe, who said, yes, mindset is more important than diet.
Wow.
How is that possible that the thoughts that I think, the gratitude I feel, or the anger or the unforgiveness that I feel is going to impact my body more than food? Mm-hmm. Seriously. Wow. Okay. So I learned this from somebody who was battling a much more challenging cancer, and her journey was pretty rough. And she kept a gratitude journal, and every day she wrote down three things. And I think she was up to like 15,000 notations of things that she was grateful for. So keeping a gratitude journal, it's nice to have one in your head, but recent research has shown that actually writing out with your hand onto a piece of paper can just change you in many ways and change your brain. So writing down, even if it's one thing, you know, like you woke up today and you can see, like, I'm grateful for that. And then laughter, another not food related, as a nutritionist, that's kind of crazy again that I'm suggesting this, but laugh more each day. I remember reading a study a million years ago when I just was getting started in my practice that kids laugh about 200 to 300 times a day and adults laugh about 10 to 12.
Big difference.
And so with that laughter, we release oxytocin, which is a natural killer cell for cancer and other cells that have gone rogue. So sometimes I fake laugh.
Yeah.
And that's okay. You know, so somebody tells a joke that maybe isn't super funny, but I will give it a pretty good belly laugh because I know I haven't hit my quota for the day.
Sometimes I do fake smiles. Like if I'm driving and I'm like paying attention to what I'm thinking about, and I'm like, it's amazing.
I love that. It's amazing.
It does.
Changes your whole head.
At the same time.
Isn't that the truth right there?
Right. That's one thing. And just about the laughter thing, I got to share this quick story with you guys. And who knows, this could help any single mom out there. When I first became a single mom, I have four children. And my youngest son at that time, he was like 4 years old, and 4, 7, 8, 9, 10. So my oldest was like 11. I have four kids. And it was the first Thanksgiving that I was going to experience as a single parent. Now, my kids, we always used to go to his dad's sister's house, because everybody would go. So of course, I didn't want to take that away from my kids. I was like, wanted them to go with their dad, you know, and I wasn't going to be there. And Thanksgiving to me is one of my favorite holidays because Thanksgiving is about food and gathering. There's no about buying the presents or anything. It's just about being together and sharing a meal and being grateful. And I just love Thanksgiving. It's my favorite holiday. And I was like, oh, so thinking up ahead, I thought to myself, I am about to hit a wall really hard. Once those kids leave with their dad, I was going to be alone by myself. And, you know, I don't have any siblings. I have my mom. I was like, wow, this is just going to be so hard. So before, like weeks before, I booked a show at the Count Basie Theater for a comedy. It was a comedy expo. And they had like five different comedians that won something and they were doing this whole show. And I bought a ticket in advance. I got like, it was the second row center. I got myself like the best seat. I got to that theater. I ordered a screwdriver. I went to my seat and I'm sitting and there's like, you know, people, I'm sure I was the only person in that theater that was there as a solo act.
Probably. Yeah. Right?
People are there with their spouses or with a group of people. I'm there as a solo act. So I'm between like these groups of people and I'm those groups of people. And I felt really awkward because, you know, I was like, really, I'm like, all right, I look like a total loser right now, but whatever, I don't care. And I'm drinking my screwdriver. And let me tell you, by the time that girl got to her third joke, I was like, ah! I was just laughing my butt off, high-fiving the people. Like, it just, and
yeah, brilliant.
I set myself up for success just because I knew I had to force myself to laugh or I would have been home in a complete dump of depression.
What a great idea you had. I would never think to do that. I love it. But I'm going to think about it now. If I go through something really rough, I'm going to book myself a comedy show.
Me too. Yeah. Me too. And have a screwdriver.
Or go on your phone
You could just go on YouTube. Yeah.
And watch a comedy skit and just laugh.
So, oh my gosh. Yeah. I love that. That's a great idea. So basically you just planned ahead because you knew that there was some sadness.
I was like iceberg
in the road
straight ahead.
Up.
Yeah. Wow. So I just wanted to share that because that's exactly in alignment what you were just talking about.
Yeah. Thank you. I will not forget that story.
And thank you for all your stories.
Yes, Deborah. We so appreciate you coming on the show today. Yeah. And you provided so much good hope, I think, for people that are suffering with cancer and then people that are trying to prevent it or afraid. I think you eased everyone's minds. Amazing that you really think that mindset and laughter could be the two biggest things that'll help us.
Yeah.
Crazy, right? I mean, especially as you said, coming from a nutritionist like yourself, that's what you would say, which is great. So those are good things to keep in mind. Everyone to know that you can connect with Deborah on Instagram. Her handle is Why Did I Get Cancer? And then she also has a website, whydidigetcancer.com. And it's full of great resources on there. And then please listen to her podcast, Why Did I Get Cancer? On Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and Spotify, because it's amazing. There are so many great experts you have on there and it's very inspiring. So thank you again.
Thank you. Loved our conversation. You two are just powerhouses. So great to meet you.
The information provided in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purpose of diagnosing, curing, treating, or preventing any disease. We are functional medicine certified health coaches and not licensed medical professionals. The opinions and advice of guests are their own and also not considered to be medical advice. Always consult with a healthcare professional when making any healthy lifestyle changes. We would love to hear from you. Please leave a comment or review. Email us at info@functionalmoms.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please hit the subscribe button.